This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road.
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, welcome in to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me. And with Summer League winding down, no better time to check in with Fran Fraschilla, the great analyst for ESPN, the former college coach. Got a great mind when it comes to these young prospects, and we go through all the big names and even look at some of the lesser-known guys, see who can make an impact on the NBA this season. So it's a great conversation. Stick around for that. As always, best way to support this podcast is to go over to Apple Podcasts, also known as iTunes, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It's the best way to make sure we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast. Glad you could join me. And I have a great guest here to break down all things Summer League. Fran Fraschilla, the former college basketball coach, now analyst over at ESPN, one of the best basketball minds out there. We're recording this from the Thomas and Mack Center as we're winding down the Las Vegas Summer League. Fran, I should say, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Chris. Love talking hoop with you.
Yeah, and you were just talking about how, you know, kind of the double A All-Star game out here, right?
Right. It's a lot of hope.
Yeah.
You know, that's what this Summer League is about. It's hope for teams like the New York Knicks, my Knicks, you know. See Kevin Knox out here playing the way he played, especially yesterday against the Lakers. But, you know, you got to keep that irrational exuberance in check if you're a fan and realize that this is not the best of the best. These kids are going to all go, and how young they are. Mm-hmm. You know, these kids are all going to go to training camps and get knocked around. And some of them will turn out to be what we saw last year, an incredible rookie class. You know, just doing some research, the most rookies to play 500 or more minutes since the merger in 1977. So, you know, each summer league is a little different, has a little different flavor. There's not a ton of buzz here like we had last year with all the great players like Simmons and Tatum and certainly Lonzo Ball. But this is a time of hope for all NBA teams who are watching their young kids out here.
All right, let's start with the Knicks because you mentioned Kevin Knox. And, you know, for the first time in a long time, the Knicks are looking like a functional franchise. You know, they're not you know, going out there and signing guys to four-year deals. They're not giving you head-scratching Joakim Noah contracts.
Right.
You know, Scott Perry's the new GM there. They've made a commitment to short-term deals. You take flyers on a Mario Hezonja type. But, you know, here at Summer League, they've been one of the more interesting stories, not just because of Kevin Knox, but Mitchell Robinson, who
was
one of those second-round type of flyers. You know, a lot of questions, but huge upside.
Yeah.
What do you think of both those players and their potential?
Well, again, being a Knicks fan, I've seen the ups and downs for 40-plus years. And I'll tell you what, they pun intended, they hit the lottery. Because in Kevin Knox, you got a guy that, you know, when I watched him in high school and college, and not knowing how good Jason Tatum would be as a rookie, I saw a Jason Tatum-like player, but not without the polish. We know Jason came into this league with such great polish fundamentally, the footwork, the shooting that he really improved on in college, and with Drew Hanlon, who gets a lot of credit for that. Gets a lot of credit for a lot of things these days, Drew. And
he's got Markelle Fultz now. Let's see what he can do there.
And Drew doesn't mind at all, by the way, but he's a good friend, and he does a great job. But been impressed with Kevin Knox. He's got he looks like an NBA player, right? He's got the size. He's got the athleticism. I thought yesterday, man, in crunch time in that, you know, in a summer league game, he's banging big shots. You know, the difference between these kids and NBA players is NBA guys make shots. And he made shots yesterday. And so I'm really excited about him for the Knicks, especially being as young as he is. And then Mitchell Robinson, you know, I'd seen him on the high school circuit. But to get him in the second round, he is the ultimate piece of NBA silly putty. If David Fizdale and his coaching staff in New York can develop this guy. Now, I don't know the mental makeup because he's coming out of a dysfunctional situation, not going to college. But to see a kid that's that big, run the floor, that kind of explosiveness and athleticism, I mean, at worst, if you're a Knicks fan, at least on the court, you're looking at Hassan Whiteside. Now, do you have Anthony Davis? Well, that's probably a stretch. But at least you got a young kid who plays with a lot of energy, for his size and has terrific athletic attributes to maybe be a good NBA player.
Yeah, those are, I mean, two guys that, and you know, the Knicks are practicing patience here. They talk about 2019, the free agency class, but I think even if they strike out, and I had this conversation with Scott Perry, like they're okay with incremental progress. And those two guys, you know, if Fizdale turns out to be the coach a lot of people think he is, they can certainly, you know, be part of that team 2-3 years down the line when their bodies develop and their games develop. I don't know that either one of them should be counting on to do anything next year. I mean, that's a lot to ask.
I was thinking about that yesterday, and you know, I think they're going to stick Kevin Knox in the starting lineup. You know, I mean, I not knowing the roster that cold up and down, I got to think that they're going to live and die with some of his mistakes. And now we you and I both know he's going to play a lot. But I got a feeling come training camp and in the early part of the regular season, if you know the future is a year away and you're not sure about Porzingis this year and you got all that cap space as you talked about, why not, as long as he's mentally ready to handle the ups and downs, as you know, I just stick him in the lineup and say, hey, we're going to live and die with, you know, his progress. And, you know, and I feel that way about Neil Aquino, who I think I mentioned last year, did not think was a pure point guard. It was more designed to be a guard in the triangle. But I think Frank's going to develop into a solid NBA rotation player. And I just hope the Knicks don't give up on him right away, because I think that he's got a good future in the league. And then, of course, we'll see what happens with the wild card, Mitchell Robinson.
Did it surprise you the number of teams that passed on Michael Porter Jr. on draft? Because I think everybody really from like 6 to 13 is going to be judged against what Porter does or doesn't become. If he becomes a star, Denver's going to look like geniuses.
Right.
And everybody's going to look like, well, you guys overreacted, too many red flags of medicals. Reverse can also be true there. What did you think of that?
I think that I was not surprised that teams passed on him. I think when you get to where Denver was with their lineup, the way it's constituted, that the risk-reward at 14 was ideal for them. And in the long run, if they hit the jackpot, my personal, as you know, and we've talked about this, and I think the average fan doesn't realize how much the medical plays a part in going to your owner and saying, hey, we really like this kid, but he's got a 70% chance of being healthy. And by the way, a 30% chance that the back's going to be a problem his whole career. And you know how owners feel about giving away that kind of dead money. And I also think that, you know, I'm probably one of those few guys that saw Michael a lot and thought, you know, there's still something missing. You know, we know he's a talented offensive player. But I saw the one game that really, I saw the most meaningful game of his college career, which was back in November. As you remember, the NCAA allowed for the hurricane relief games. And I saw a healthy Michael Porter play Kansas in the Sprint Center in front of 20,000 people. It's not even on Synergy. And I didn't see it on any of, you know, Mike Schmidt's highlight packages, which he does an incredible job. And
he left us. We don't talk about Mike
okay,
anymore.
Yeah, that's right. He went to the I'm not even going to say where he went because I want to keep my job. But he's obviously doing well. But so anyway, I saw flaws in Michael's game that combined with the injury risk, I thought 14 was a good risk for Denver. I really did.
Yeah, especially, I mean, look, they whoever they were going to draft there, I mean, Troy Brown went right after them.
Right.
You weren't going to get somebody who's going to play right away or be an impact player next year. And they're a team that can make the playoffs anyway. I mean, they're right there in the mix.
They're in a good spot. You know, they're in a brutal spot because they're in the West. But if you look at their team, you know, their young team, and you know, playing most of the year without Millsap, and we don't know what Millsap, you know, where he is now in his career. But getting Will Barton back and Murray and Gary Harris is probably, you know, if you're a college basketball fan, you even forget Gary Harris played at Michigan State, and you know how good he's gotten, and Jokic and some of the other young guys.
Yeah. From the good to maybe the bad out here, and I've watched a lot of Trae Young this week.
Yes.
Has not shot the ball well. Looks overmatched physically, which a lot of guys tend to do. Looks overmatched when teams are kind of blitzing him, when they're being physical with him on the outside. He's a gifted passer. I think that's for sure. But I think this summer league is kind of a reality check for the people out there that still believe that we are going to have a Steph Curry-like rookie season. Remember, Steph averaged like 18 in his rookie season. I don't think we're going to see that from Trae Young.
Well, you know, this is so complicated, this whole Trae Young talk, because from my point of view, I must have done 15 Oklahoma games last year in the Big 12. I've living in Dallas, and I had a son that played at Oklahoma. He's worked Trae out. I kind of know Trae Young from A to Z. And I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure how his first year is going to go. I said during and before the draft, and I told his dad this too, and you know what? Go get some tape of Mike Conley. Go, you know, go watch Mike Conley play point guard in the NBA and start off being Mike Conley before you want to be Steph. And I talked to Lloyd Pierce, his new coach, and he said, hey, and I say this humbly, it's not a big deal. It's not like I've invented the wheel, but he said, I use that with Trey because Lloyd happened to have coached both Steph and Mike. Now, Lloyd Pierce was in Memphis for a year with Mike Conley. So my thing with Trey right now is because of his gifted passing and because he has a really good feel for getting his teammates the ball, is let's back off on the scoring and the ridiculous shots, and let's try to hit singles and doubles as opposed to grand slam home runs. And but at the same time, you know, he's going to be, as you said, Chris, he's going to be overmatched physically, especially defensively. And offensively, we both know that in the league, if you can get to the lane, you'll get to the lane because of the hand check rule. So I don't worry about that, but I worry about the decision-making vis-a-vis his scoring versus the passing. And I think that's going to be a work in progress for him, but he's going to a place that's in a total rebuild. And again, another rookie that can live with some of those mistakes.
And low pressure, at least early on.
Right.
I mean, the Hawks have to figure stuff out with Dennis Schroeder and what do they do there. But you know, they're not expected to win, so maybe being in that environment will be good for him.
Did you notice what Travis did? He drafted Trey. He drafted Steph Curry, Klay Thompson with Kevin Huerter, and Draymond Green with Amari Spellman. You know, so you know, at least the blueprint is good. Now we'll see if all those guys, you know, turn out.
As Wes Wilcox said to me on draft night, Travis has a type. You know, a type of player, and Trey Young fits into that type of player. But you know, there are three guys I think in this draft, at least the top of the draft, inextricably linked. You got Marvin Bagley because he was taken over Luka Doncic and Trae Young. You got Doncic because Dallas moves up to get him, and Trae Young because the Hawks move back to get him. Those three guys, I think, will be judged against each other as their careers progress.
Yeah, I think you're right, but I think, and I love what Dallas did, you know, and living in Dallas and knowing Donnie and Tony Ronzoni and those guys, this was a Donnie Nelson move, which means it was a Mark Cuban move, as you know, because nothing happens without Mark. But I think you don't want to be unfair to the Hawks because they also got another human being in a couple of years.
And we 2019 don't, first, yeah.
And we don't know who the human being is going to be. So I think you got to kind of say, okay, if you're a Hawks fan, let's see how the whole thing plays out. But it was a good deal for both teams because I think that being in his first year as a GM, Travis probably didn't want the pressure of missing on an international guy, which still I think is a prevailing thought in the league. And then,
do you have questions about Doncic? I mean, do you?
Well, I could be wrong, which I've been many times, but I think he's going to be a high-level starter. I don't see transcendent. I don't, you know, I don't see like 10-time All-Star. I just think, as I said on many times, he's a step slow, but he's two steps ahead. He's one of those players that is so quick of mind, and he's big and tough. And I was talking to Epe Udoh yesterday, who I covered at Baylor, and we just got into conversation about the EuroLeague. And I did this during the season with guys that are playing over there. I checked in with them, and, you know, everybody who has played in both the NBA and in the EuroLeague have all said he's not going to fail. But I think there's also questions about how good a player. But I think Doncic is going to be as good as the people around him because he's got such a great mind for the game. You grew up, as I did, watching Larry Bird. We're not going to compare him to Larry Bird, but we can compare his ability to see the game like Gretzky, like Bird, like Nash, like some of the great point guards who've played in this league, to see a play ahead. And I think Luka has that because of the level of competition he's already had that great success at.
Where does he struggle then? Like, what is he going to be have a hard time dealing with? I mean, we mentioned at the top in throwaway kind of line, Hazonia, and he...
You know, yeah, I thought it was. I missed on him.
Yeah,
and I know
he was mentally. I think he had he really.
Yeah,
struggled.
And I like where he's going because I love the bounce back guys in this league. I mean, I love the bounce. I love like
the Knicks are redrafting, right? You got Emmanuel Mudiay out there.
Yeah,
just going with the top five.
Well, I mean, how about PJ Tucker?
Mm-hmm.
How about PJ, who spent 1 year in the league, went overseas, came back, and reinvented himself? So hoping that. But in Luka's case. The obvious is the athleticism, but and we know that we saw in the playoffs the isolation game. I think inside of a team concept, his defense is going to be fine. Now, is he going to get exposed on certain nights? In this league, everybody does. But I think he's got the toughness and the competitiveness and the intelligence to be a good team defender. He struggled with his shooting this year. He shot 32% from three, but I would say a lot of that. There's nothing wrong with a shot other than a couple of tweaks that I'm sure the Knicks will make. But he's played so much basketball in 2 years that I think he wore out. As I see the great Ron Adams walking through the lobby. The great Ron Adams walking through the lobby of the arena. But I'm sorry to do that to your podcast.
This is,
Golden State Warriors.
Podcasting in real time.
One of the gurus. I didn't mean to interrupt your podcast, but I...
That's what happens when you do these podcasts in a concourse. But yes.
He's got limitations. Yeah. But I think the shooting's going to be fine. He had to take so many big shots for that team because people don't realize this. They played without Sergio Yule most of the season, and he went from being the second banana to a 18, 19-year-old top banana in the second-best league in the world, and he flourished.
So do you think of the three I mentioned – does Bagley have the highest upside of them? Because, I talk to people in Sacramento, they rave about the athleticism. Mm-hmm. I mean, just freakish athleticism, especially for a guy 6'11". They think, though I'm a little skeptical about this, being with Zach Randolph, lefty, he can learn some things in that first year, probably the only year Zach's going to be his teammate, at least in Sacramento. Does he have the highest upside of the three, or what do you think?
I think so. I think he does as in terms of being an all-star. I think he's going to have a lot of empty calorie games this year because the team's going to be so bad. He's going to go out and get 22 and 15 some nights and lose by 20 to the Bulls. I think the defensive end, he's going to struggle early, and it's not because he doesn't want to be a good defender, because I heard that from people. Oh, he doesn't play D. I think he and Ayton both played hard all season. They did. But I think Marvin's going to struggle on the defensive end because he's very light. Lower body, he is going to get pushed around. But he is a quick jumper, very athletic, a knack for scoring. I love guys that run the floor hard, offense, defense to offense, because they know they're going to score. And you want to make sure they do it the other way, but he runs hard because he knows he's going
to
score.
It's tough sometimes to figure out those Duke players defensively because of the defensive system they play in. But the Kings think that he's got the athleticism to step out on those screen and rolls and be kind of an agile big man on the perimeter. But it's a bit of an unknown. It's almost like Syracuse with some of those guys.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, I agree. But I the effort is definitely there. And I've told people, I watched a lot of Duke tape leading up into the draft. They didn't play zone because of Marvin Bagley and Wendell Carter. They played zone because of the two guards. No offense to Gary Trent and Trayvon Duval, but those two guys could not keep college players in front of them. And I think Coach K had to go to the zone, but it wasn't because of the big guys. And doesn't mean that Marvin's not going to struggle. He will, but I give him credit for want to, and I think that'll serve him well. He's got to get a lot stronger.
The guy playing with Bagley, Harry Giles, who basically redshirted last season, you're starting to see a little bit of signs of the kid that was, like, at one point, right, the number one ranked high school player, like, in the country. I mean,
yes.
The injuries derailed him. Physically, he looks strong. Still a lot of rawness to that game that needs to be ironed out. But, I mean, for where they got him, he could turn out to be a pretty decent player.
I think so. I mean, and you know this. Like, in this league, there's the all-stars, there's the starters, there's the valuable rotation guys, and then the rest of the roster. And first of all, it's great to see him healthy, and he plays hard. He looks like he's excited to be back on the court, as anybody would be. In my mind, I remember a game where USA beat Croatia in, I think it was the Under-19 World Championships. The USA team had Jason Tatum, Harry Giles, Josh Jackson, and the MVP was Jalen Brunson in a overtime game against Croatia. Croatia had Zizic and Zubats, and Harry Giles could not score inside. He had trouble scoring over length, and that always stuck in my mind. So, where's that leave him now? Forget the number one high school player in the country stuff. He's past that. Now he's trying to be a pro. I think he's going to be a good, solid pro. I think he plays with a good motor. He's a good athlete. And I think there's room for improvement. And I think where Sacramento got him, they got a steal because they're going to get a guy that's probably going to play in the league 10, 12 years. So let's start with that. And then if he becomes a star, I'll put my hand up and say I was wrong. But I think he's going to be a good NBA player.
Again, we talk about the Knicks being functional. The Kings might start looking functional with some of these guys here, as long as they don't give Marcus Smart the $20 million
give
contract.
Give him all that money, yeah.
Throwing money around. Let me bounce around to a couple of guys. When you look at the top of the first round, first half of the first round, Troy Brown was probably the biggest surprise. I mean, going 15, yes. At least to me anyway, going 15 to Washington. Didn't know much about him. I have watched him out here. Can shoot the ball. Like he can play
that's
a little bit.
That's a big
bit.
Thing.
Yeah, and
that's
he's young. Thing. And again, they're not. You know, I talked to Scott Brooks about this. They're not putting any expectations on him this year, but they're excited about him. What do you know about him? What do you think?
Well, you know what? The first year I helped run the Steph Curry camp in Oakland was Troy's end of his freshman year, going into his sophomore year, and we had Trayvon Duval, Markelle Fultz, Dennis Smith. I look back on it; it's pretty good. Josh Jackson, and Troy was a precocious 6'6" wing point guard. I mean, he was a wing playmaker, and really, that's what he is. And the biggest there's two things that I worried about with him. He has great vision, and he is a great teammate, and he's a great young man. And you know, we talked about this the last few days with people. The modern NBA right now is probably in as good a shape as it's ever been as far as character. The superstars, by and large, are great guys. And the young kids, if you talk to NBA people, they said the interviews in Chicago were off the charts. And Troy Brown is a great young man. I thought he might struggle with his outside shooting because that was not a strength of his in college. And he's not a great athlete. He's an average NBA athlete, which is good enough. But I really liked what he's done out here because he has he's played the game the right way, and he has a great feel. He has a great feel, and so I really like where the Wizards got him. Mm-hmm. I think it's a perfect spot for him, mm-hmm. and he's going to an organization with, you know, we hope some guys that can help him grow up and learn how to play in the backcourt in the NBA.
Mm-hmm. We should mention DeAndre Ayton, and I mean, clear number one. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you watch, and I didn't watch more than, you know, a handful of games of Ayton at the college level, but you watch him out there, and you talk about modern NBA big man, a guy that could just do a little bit of everything, physically imposing, athlete. He's going to be a star, I think. I do too.
Yeah. I'm with you, man. I watched him at the end of his college season, and he ran by me. Dave Pasch had a mental health break one night to get away from Bill Walton, so I did the game with him. And I did Arizona State. And you know the Coors Freight Train commercial?
Mm-hmm.
He went by me like the Coors Freight Train. He's that fast and big. So I like what he's doing out here. If his Phoenix Sun teammates learn how to pass into the post, mm-hmm. which is a lost art, and I'm sure it'll be improved under Igor, he'll be very, very good.
One of the more interesting guys in the back half of the first round was Anfernee Simons, who didn't play college basketball. One of those guys who went straight into the IMG Academy.
Yeah.
He looks like he's 12. I mean, he does. Like, I'd like to see his birth certificate out there because you watch him out there on the floor, and even amongst other young players, he looks incredibly young. But he's got a nice little touch, I think, on that shot. I don't know if he can develop into a point guard. I know they're not expecting much with two great guards already in Portland, but did you see him as a real NBA prospect?
You know, we had him at Steph Curry camp last summer, and I don't remember him. Mm. I mean, I know he was there, but I don't remember him. I mean, we had some really good players that were NBA first round picks, and remember I said AA baseball? I mean, he's going to the Appalachian League. He's going to Bristol, Virginia, and playing rookie ball. And the interesting thing about Portland is that they don't have a G League team. And so he's going to be with the main team the whole year, or if they farm him out, I don't know, to get some G League experience. But with every NBA team virtually now having a G League team, you got to stick him somewhere where another team's going to have to develop a guy that is going to not develop one of their own. So it's going to be very interesting with him. I think he's very fortunate, although we saw glimpses of his scoring out here, very fortunate to go in the first round. And Portland's taking a flyer on him. I don't want to say he's 2 years away from being years away. But I think that that's a real gamble right there.
Bruno's 6 years away maybe at this point from playing anywhere. Well, one of the teams I had some questions about was the Clippers, what they did on draft night. I thought the Clippers, with one of those two picks in that range, should have taken a flyer on Michael Porter. I thought, you know, look, you've got two picks. You need a star out in L.A. Why not use one of them to take a flyer? They wind up with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander via the trade, and they take Jerome Robinson. I thought they were pretty risky picks. You know, Shai prototypical size, right, for an NBA player, but didn't really show that skill set necessarily in college. And I watched a lot of Jerome Robinson, friend. I'm a Boston College alum. I watched him. I didn't see, like, NBA star, but he apparently killed it in workouts.
46 against Notre Dame.
I saw a good player. Yeah. But like, maybe it's just like physically I don't see it in him. I didn't see it.
Okay.
And then they jumped up. What do you think?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, like, we're hyping.
Maybe I'm just pissed that he didn't go back to school. Like, Kai Bowman back to BC. Let's make a run.
I tell you what, credit to Jimmy Christian.
Yeah.
And Scott Spinelli, by the way, who found both of those guys. Mm-hmm. And a little piece of trivia. You know, NC State has hired a new coach in the last couple of years, in part because right under their nose, they had these two kids, Jerome Robinson and some kid named Devontae Graham, that grew up in Raleigh and went to the same high school to produce Pete Maravich. So, you know, there you go. But pretty cool that was a high school backcourt, you know. But it's funny. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has been the talk out here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't see it. I mean, I see what he's doing. He's averaging over 20 points a game. I'm going to see his game here shortly against Troy Brown. Good matchup of two long, you know, playmaking big guards. Mm-hmm. Shai's an average NBA athlete. I think his ball skills are average. His passing is average. Talking NBA now, not Kentucky fans will hear this and go, what do you mean average? He was the best player in Kentucky. No, this is the NBA. And so I'm kind of going to take a wait-and-see approach. To me, he's a younger DeLon Wright. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a younger DeLon Wright. Apparently, he's an unbelievable kid with a great work ethic, and he's going to have to overcome some physical attributes like the athleticism, but he's had a good week. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't shot well, and he doesn't finish at the rim yet. So I'll get crushed on by the Kentucky fans. That's fine. And then Jerome, the thing, I will say this about Jerome. What I really like about Jerome is that he's a shot maker. You know, he can catch. And I thought he had as good a ability to come off screens this year and get a good look as anybody in college basketball. I don't think he's a ready-made player. But in a league that values guys that space the floor and make shots, I could see it. I could see it. And he's another great kid who, by the way, won one ACC game his first 2 years at BC, and give him credit for helping, you know, going into a situation where it wasn't easy to go into, and it was all ACC as a junior.
Let me ask you about the second round guys, because there's always somebody, right? Maybe one or two guys that emerge. Some strong candidates in this group so far, at least based largely someone on the contracts teams are signing.
Yes.
You know, Jared Vanderbilt, Denver, is excited about. You see Svi. I'm not even going to try his last name.
Mikhail Luke.
There you go.
I said it so many times.
There you go.
Mikhail Luke.
Lakers, giddy about him. I watched Gary Trent, you know, shoot the lights out of the ball.
Right.
I mean, I've had people tell me they think he might be the best shooter in this draft. You know, if you look at that list of second-round guys, who gets you excited the most? Who do you think has the most potential?
A guy that I didn't think would be, and we don't know if his NBA career is going to go the same way, but a guy that I wasn't high on because didn't think he had a great freshman year, De'Anthony Melton from the Rockets, who's got athleticism, toughness. He's gonna be able to defend, I think, NBA guards. And the one thing he's doing is he's shooting the ball well, which was not a strength of his in his first year at USC. And for people listening to the podcast, he didn't play this year because he was caught up in that NCAA ineligibility scandal at USC. So the Rockets, I think, picking wherever they picked in 47, I think, maybe. But I really like him. And I love what Svi's doing because the thing about Svi that a lot of people don't realize is he came to college at 17 and he graduated at 21. So, and he's got a great looking stroke, and hey, you know, LeBron James is gonna love Josh Hart, and we don't know how much Svi's gonna play, but he's gonna love guys making shots because we know Rondo and McGee and likely Lance are not gonna make a lot of jump shots. So, I think Josh Hart and Svi have an opportunity to at least help.
Yeah, you got to have shooters around him, despite the fact the Lakers don't seem to at this point publicly be placing a premium
right.
on.
Yeah.
On that, but yeah, I like the way Svi's. I like the way Josh Hart's played out here. I mean,
you know, it's funny. I got a list. I call these guys the schoolyard bullies. Mm-hmm. These are the guys that played here last year, and then played a lot as rookies in the league. And I got Josh Hart, John Collins, Justin Jackson, and Sindarius Thornwell. Now, you know, none of those guys may be great players, but they all played a lot as rookies, and they They come into the league this year, into the summer league. Coach Pierce walking by and that terrific Atlanta Hawks young staff. But anyway, I call them the schoolyard bullies because they look like they're dominating out here. And Josh Hart, man, he gets better every year. He's looked like one of the best players in this summer league.
You know, a guy, now that you're mentioning, a guy trying to salvage his career has been Wade Baldwin out here. I mean, a disaster in Memphis, picked up by Portland. And you can see, you know, physically he can play.
Yes.
He's been able to finish pretty well out here. He can shoot the ball. Still kind of, you know, he's a little griping, you know, a little referee chatter and things like that, which has been a knock against him. But, you know, he looks like an NBA player against those
boys. You know what I say about him? And I did a clinic at the Hoop Group camp about 7-8 years ago when he was a high school junior in New Jersey. And the attributes that have kind of trailed him in the NBA attitude-wise, both at Vandy and in the NBA, were evident then. Trey Baldwin is trying to say low. He's trying to say hello when it's time to say goodbye. In other words, I think he got a rude awakening as an NBA first-round pick, rookie, disastrous play in Memphis, and now figures out that if he doesn't get his act together both on and off the court, and let's just take on the court. His mom and dad are law enforcement people, so he's not going to go rob a bank. But, you know, to me, he was always a spoiled kid. And I hope he hears this and maybe takes something from it. But he on the court is realizing that he's seeing his NBA career flash before his eyes, because if he doesn't play well, then he's going to end up playing in Israel or France or Germany the rest of his career. So good for him. I hope he figures it out, because, you know, Chris, as a college basketball guy who loves the NBA but doesn't follow it like guys like you, my favorite part is turning on the TV during the season and seeing a guy I covered in college, and he's 26 or 27, and I go, man, that kid figured it out. He figured out how to be a good NBA player, even if he's not a starter. Man, that kid's making $12 million a year being a good role player. And you hope that's the case with Wade Baldwin.
Before I let you go, the Adam Silver is out here in Vegas. Michelle Roberts, who signed a new contract with the NBA Players Association. It seems like 2021, 2022, the one-and-done rule is going to go away. I don't know what it's going to look like, but it seems like the gates are going to be open once again for high school players to make the jump. As a college guy, what do you think about that? Is it the right move?
I think it's the right move. And it means there's going to be some young people who make mistakes. But unlike the mistakes that were made in the 90s and the early 2000s, the NAEBs and guys like that, we got the G League now. Mm-hmm. We got the AAA baseball. You know, like we got Pawtucket, if you're a Red Sox fan or a Celtics fan. So there are going to be guys that make mistakes that may have to go the hard way. And go to play in a G League for a while. But I also think guys like DeAndre Ayton shouldn't go to college if they can go right to the NBA. So I like it. It's the American way, capitalism, et cetera. There's going to be guys like Trae Young who go to college with the idea they're going to be two or three-year guys who make it big and decide they come out after one. But for those five guys every year or less that should go right to the NBA, I think more power to him. I think it's a smart move. This way, college coaches can concentrate on guys that want to have 2 feet in the circle for as long as that might be, as opposed to the guy that when you get DeAndre Ayton, you hope that he buys in for 6 months, which he did. But if you can go right to the NBA out of high school, good or bad decision, I say you should have the freedom to do it.
What do you think about the idea of a player maintaining their eligibility after the draft, you know, because a lot of these guys, the agents are in their ears saying, you're going to be a first-round pick, you're going to be a first-round pick. They wind up going like 56th and having nothing guaranteed. What do you think of the idea of eligibility?
I love it. I think we ought to explore all those things. You know, I had a son that, I'm embarrassed to say that he got into Harvard because I could never get into it. But
me neither.
But, yeah, but, you know, think about this. You know, what's the kid's name that's with the Bruins now? Donato?
Mm-hmm.
Whose dad is the coach at Harvard?
Yep.
You know, my son had played basketball at Harvard. He had five really good friends who played hockey at Harvard, who were drafted. And like when Donato finished his Harvard career, like 3 weeks later, he's taking a regular shift with the Bruins. I'll give you a perfect example. Zaire Smith, who I watched because I cover the Big 12 and I live in Dallas. I had never heard of Zaire Smith his senior year in high school, and I follow basketball pretty closely. He goes to Texas Tech, and he has a terrific year. He's a great kid, and he's obviously a good athlete. The best thing for him would have been to be drafted by the Suns, traded, And the Philadelphia 76ers should have the right to say, we think you should go back to Texas Tech for another season because you developed really well under Coach Beard. And our G League team has got some guys. We just think it's better for you to go back to college. You can come to G League if you want. We'll bring you to training camp. But we're going to pay you your money. But after you go one more year to Texas Tech, I think like you ought to be able to do things like that. Mm-hmm. Because Zaire Smith is a long way from being a good NBA player, mm-hmm. but he's got tremendous upside. And I think we need to explore all those different things. You don't get drafted, you can go back. You get drafted, you don't like where you got drafted, you go back, but they retain your rights. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we ought to kind of make it easier for these kids to make these decisions, because otherwise, you know, there's no foolproof way, but there are going to always be mistakes.
Are you as interested as I am to see kid from Syracuse that decommitted to go to the G League? Are you as interested to see if it works out for him and how it affects other potential players?
Yeah, but in his case, and I've gotten to know the situation pretty well, you know, I don't think that kid knew anything about the G League. Mm. I just think it was a abstract idea floating out there out of space, and he said, "Yo, you know what? I don't want to take psychology classes. I want to just go to the G League." Mm-hmm. And so he was just in training camp with the USA G League team that Jeff Van Gundy's coaching. So I had pretty good insight. And from what I heard, he's a good kid. He is an athlete. He wants to learn, but he has no idea about professional basketball. So it's going to be interesting because, as you know, he has to be drafted in the G League draft. And it'll be interesting because if you draft him, you don't keep his rights. Like Salt Lake has the first pick in the G League. Don't ask me why I know that. But if they take him and they play him and he plays great, it doesn't mean that the Jazz get the pick. He goes back into next year's 2019 draft. So at least the G League is there as an alternative for these guys, which is different than when they were playing for the Albany Patroons 25 years ago.
No question. Fran, always great to talk basketball with you. Terrific stuff. One of the best basketball minds out there. Catch Fran on ESPN. Catch him on Twitter, @FranFraschilla. Thanks for joining me, as you always do every year.
It's always a pleasure, Chris. I enjoy talking hoop. I know how much you love hoop, and I love talking hoop with people who love it like me.
I'll be ready to leave Vegas, though.
I know.
Just like you are.
Me so, too. Me
this
too.
Summer league is a monster, man. Like, all 30 teams is...
You know, Warren and Albert, Warren McGarry, it's amazing. As Mark Jones would say, and I'll leave you with this, Las Vegas, the epicenter of the summer basketball universe, which is where we are.
And it will be for a long time. Fran, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Fran Fraschilla for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.